Welcome to the Health Ranger Report on Brighteon.tv. And today we bring you a special guest, a returning guest, Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. And today we talk about breaking new research that has been published in the journal called Nature Photonics. It was also covered by the Wall Street Journal. And it talks about ground-based terawatt laser systems that are able to steer lightning. You know, they beam the lasers at the sky and they can decide where the lightning strikes. They can actually control lightning and storms using ground-based lasers. Now, this is all part of the weather-controlled technology portfolio that people like Dane Wigington have been warning us about for many years, and there are over 100 patents showing this kind of tech or similar weather-controlled technologies in the U.S. Patent Office. So stay tuned for that interview right here on Brighteon.tv. We'll be right back. All right, welcome to today's featured interview, and we have returning Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. And Dane is truly one of the most frequently requested guests on our show, and we have two big breaking news items that we're going to run past Dane. First of all, of course, the crazy California storms that struck in the last week or so, and Dane is right there in California, so we're going to get a from the ground report from him on what's going on, what's behind that. But then we have this other breaking news: high-powered lasers are steering lightning bolts. This has been reported by the Wall Street Journal in just the last day. It's a study published in the journal Nature Photonics, and they were able to actually steer lightning bolts with terawatt lasers by beaming lasers from the ground up into the sky. So anybody out there who thinks that it's all nonsense talking about steering storms or controlling weather, read the journal Nature Photonics or read the Wall Street Journal, because there it is admitted yet again. So Dane Wigington's our guest. Again, geoengineeringwatch.org. Dane, it's an honor to have you on, sir. Thank you for your contributions to humanity. I really look forward to this conversation.
Oh, I do as well, Mike, and the same gratitude right back to you and all the work you've done over so many years to try to pull back the curtain and expose the insanity which is metastasizing into every imaginable aspect of our life, our society, on what's left of our environment. It is truly a train that's off the tracks. So thank you for all your work with bringing it to light, Mike.
It seems obvious now. It's not just people like you or myself or others talking about the weaponization of the ecosystem, the biosphere. It's obvious now to more and more people that there is an engineered biosphere collapse or destruction that is in play right now. Would you agree that more people are finally waking up to this reality?
I do agree, but it's very perplexing that it has taken so long when our skies so often look like something from a science fiction film. Blue skies are almost gone. In any video you see of anywhere, Africa, China, any place other than India, Asia, the skies are white or dirty white. You rarely see blue sky anywhere, even commonly in backgrounds. I know you've seen this, Mike, of advertisements. You have the crisscross skies with climate engineering aerosol dispersions everywhere. And we live in societies that are trying to convince themselves that this is normal when it's anything but. And aside from the visible trails, Mike, what we're trying to convey at geoengineeringwatch.org is the other facets of climate engineering. A very key core aspect is chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. So when we have these flash cool downs, and you've seen that, right, Mike? You've seen these temperatures now. You see even the climate engineering cover-up crews like Weather Channel, which are paid disinformation people at best. You see them now talking about weather whiplash a lot, don't you?
Yes, yes.
They use that term a lot. So, and they use the term rain changing over to snow and the warm side of the, quote, winter storm and the cold side of the winter storm. Since when does a winter storm have a warm side with tornadoes and thunder showers? Again, they make it up as they go. And unfortunately, we have too many in the population that are willing to accept whatever narrative is thrown out, and that needs to change.
Yeah, that is extraordinary, and that goes way beyond, you know, climate and weather. People are accepting all kinds of crazy narratives right now. There is a brainwashing or psychological operation in play. But the thing about weather is, just as you said, people can look at the sky and people our age, I don't know how old you are, but I grew up in the 70s and I can remember as a kid looking at the sky. Not only were the skies blue, but they were full of tens of thousands of birds also. I mean, there was life everywhere. And I lived in a suburb. And today you look around and it's mostly dead. It's just the life isn't there anymore. Even the insects, I don't hear the locusts like I used to hear them. I don't see the bumblebees like I used to see them. I mean, we are under attack, it seems.
And the entire web of life is collapsing. I grew up in the 70s as well. And that every tree was full of birds where I was anyway. And we had every rock, every log, anything you could turn over, there was legions of insects of various kinds, and now they're almost non-existent. And what people need to understand is that when these aspects of the web of life perish, we will perish with them. And we see with other organisms like trees, Mike, without which I know you know, we would not be here, and how many are blowing over when the wind blows now everywhere. And if you look at their root balls, their root systems, because we know the rain is toxic, we're not guessing. In fact, we have recent peer-reviewed study to prove there's not an uncontaminated drop of rain anywhere in the world.
That's true.
You saw that. I know you follow that. North Pole, South Pole, top of Mount Everest, doesn't matter. All contaminated. So when we see the root balls of these trees tip over, their feeder roots are largely gone. When you have summer now in California, that in where the region I live, that was 3 months long 20 years ago, now it's 9 months long, the feeder roots all die off. So once the trees lose those, the whole root ball system begins to die back, just like the canopies are dying back. When the ground then becomes saturated, the wind blows, there's nothing to hold that tree up. It falls over. So there are so many aspects affecting these core pillars of life on which all of our lives depend. And we have official agencies lying to us, telling us it's just the beetles killing the trees, which is their final fallback excuse. We're drowning literally in a sea of deception.
Now, talk to us about the recent storms that really devastated certain parts of California. Were you in the area that was hit by all that heavy rainfall?
No. And in fact, that region was not that big. That was another mass deception. Let's rewind back, Mike, to December 2021. We had similar circumstances, lots and lots of sensationalized headlines. The rainpocalypse coming in, the big snow levels in the Sierras that we were told were going to put a massive dent in the drought. What happened during then that winter leading into the summer of 2022? Drought just deepened further. Worst drought based on paleo data in at least 1,200 years. So all that rain didn't mean much when they turned off the spigot, and they did at the transition from 2021 to 2022, which would be last winter. There was no rain in my region on the east side of Lake Shasta, which normally gets 70 inches a year. After late December, there was not a drop of rain until April. Literally the entire winter season, not a drop. We should have received about 50 inches of rain where I live. Nothing. So, and again, we have to consider this, Mike, with all the snow. And you've seen the sensationalized headlines about all the snow in the Sierras and parts of the Sierras, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
So what happens with a chemically artificially nucleated frozen material. And that's what we're dealing with here. There's no question. We've tested the precipitation. So the artificial ice nucleating elements are in this precipitation. It tends to sublimate. I know you know what that means, but for your listeners, it to a large degree converts from a solid to a gas, bypassing the liquid phase. So there's not nearly as much runoff of this frozen material that's artificially nucleated as there would be off a naturally nucleated material. So that's, again, one more reason that snowpack doesn't mean that much, not to mention the fact that it's toxic. So we see one section of California, Mike, from the Bay Area, slightly north, and then south, Portola, and other regions along a specific corridor where they trained in most of that moisture. And we examined photographs from a CNN expose on the flood area in California. They made it sound like the entire state was underwater, which was a blatant, glaring lie. Nothing unusual in my area. In fact, on the east side of Lake Shasta, which is a big normal rain area, we didn't get that much here. But 33 of 35 pictures on a CNN photo expose of the California rainpocalypse. 33 of those pictures were from the same exact corridor in Central California. No. So
I'm so glad we're talking to you about this directly, because even I was under the impression that it was a much larger area, much more inundation. I mean, of course, that's why we have to talk to you actually being there. It's just incredible, the level of deception.
It's massive. They want people to go back to sleep thinking that the drought has been put to bed. Couldn't be further from the truth. So you see these reservoirs you might have seen on the news. They say they show specific reservoirs in that same corridor that are now at full pool. Did you see that?
They showed overall narrative. Yeah,
they showed some that are full now in that specific corridor. Those are very small, shallow reservoirs. What about Lake Shasta? It's in my backyard. Literally, Lake Shasta is my backyard. Biggest reservoir in the state. It's half empty right now.
Wow. So what that means then is, unless there's a lot more widespread rain between now and, you know, early or late spring, then this summer is going to be absolutely brutal for California.
You're completely correct. That's exactly what it means. And what people don't stop to think about, and agencies certainly don't tell them about, you can't just make up for a loss of 500 inches of rain, which is what the loss is where I live. Since 2007, we're about 500 inches of rain short. You can't make up for the fact that the atmospheric relative humidity over that period has been getting lower and lower and lower. And in fact, that drop in atmospheric RH, which creates a VPD scenario, vapor pressure deficit, I think we've talked about in a previous exchange, which Right. means the trees can't open their stomata, their respiratory ports, breathing ports. They can't absorb CO2. They can't expel oxygen. They're simply dormant. And that's even harder on trees like Doug fir, which is the primary tree here, even harder than the lack of water and the toxic rain. You combine all those factors over 15 years, they can dump as much toxic rain on us as they want. The forests are done. In regard to Doug fir, they are all dying off here. I can't express how grave the situation is with the Doug firs, and the official agencies blame it on the beetles, but that is not the case. And again, back to the rain that we have had, nothing significant in many parts of the state. And we watched them with radio frequency microwave transmissions on the SAT radar loops. We watched them manipulating the rain into that corridor, because the frequency transmissions have a repelling effect on the aerosolized storm moisture. So it repels it away from that transmitter. Mm-hmm. So the transmitters on either side of where they funneled this water were activated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but bring our audience up to speed about this idea. For those new listeners, talk about the ground stations that are located in various areas, including, I believe, there exists some mobile or ship-based transmission stations that can operate, for example, you know, off the coast of Florida or in the Gulf area. And how give us an overview of kind of how this works. And then we'll bring in that new science about steering storms, which showed up in the Wall Street Journal.
You're correct on all fronts. And that's why you're able to get so much data out, Mike. I appreciate that you keep track of many battlefronts. And the ground-based transmission facilities, the NEXRAD facilities gridded throughout the U.S., used to steer storms from the west in California to hurricanes in Florida. The transmitters, when activated, energized, have a repelling effect on the atmospheric storm moisture that's been saturated with electrically conductive particles, the climate intervention elements. So by those means of repelling, as that moisture's coming in, if they activate transmitters on either side of that moisture, they can push it toward the center, if you will. And then, as you correctly mentioned, SBX radar, sea-based X-band radar, that looks like, if your listeners want to look that up, SBX radar looks like a giant golf ball on top of an oil derrick. And those are the biggest SBX platforms. You have SBX also on military vessels. So again, with these means, their ability to manipulate storm moisture is absolutely profound. And it's inarguable. If your listeners search geoengineeringwatch.org hurricanes, and they can find our coverage of Hurricane Ian, which I know we went over last time, and Nicole, Harvey, Maria, you can really see the transmitter manipulation of those storms, because we go through painstaking effort to record each loop as it happens. It's hours and hours of that. So the bottom line is, between saturating the atmosphere with the electrically conductive particles, ionizing the air mass, they can then manipulate that with the ground-based transmitters. And their ability to control the spigot, the flow of rain, where it rains, how much it rains, how toxic that rain is absolutely staggering. So they're trying to create a situation, in my opinion, right now, where people think, okay, California's had all this rain, everything's fine, drought's over, couldn't be further from the truth.
I remember the first time I heard this idea of weather control, I was very, very skeptical. I thought, that's impossible, that weather is so powerful and large scale and so far beyond the reach of humans to directly manipulate. And then I remember years ago, I saw that your website, geoengineeringwatch.org, you had collected a series of published patents all about weather control. And what's the number of patents that you've documented so far? I forgot the number.
We're adding to them every year, and we're getting close to 200 now.
Wow.
So every year there's many more patents right now being added to this skyscraper of insanity that is this list. And when you have – once you interfere with the systems, and again, the climate system is far more malleable than most people would ever imagine. When we rewind back to the – commencement of Project Cirrus, which was the U.S. military's first intervention with hurricanes, 1947, with a very, very small addition to the equation. It was, I believe, I can't remember how many kilos of dry ice. It was a very small amount. It was 40 or 50 kilos of dry ice or even less. The effect on a hurricane from that was so profound that it changed course. And there were many lawsuits that were initiated because they felt the military had actually negatively affected this hurricane, caused it to make landfall in a place where it did a lot of damage. And that's from an extremely small intervention. So what's interesting to me is, Mike, you know, the vast majority of people know of, quote, weather modification programs, right? A single engine propeller driven airplane with a few flares in the wings, right? Most people know about that. And they think somehow that has an effect. But then when you bring up the fact that militaries around the globe, with our U.S. military being the biggest player of all, can profoundly affect the weather when you have a military tanker like a KC-135 that can carry 100 tons of material and dump it in the clouds, then they think, no, that would never happen. Our military would never do that, or our government would never do that. What an incredibly naive notion.
Well, and also now when you have these ground-based stations – they don't have to carry the payload with them. They can be tied into the power grid, and they can beam actual electromagnetic energy that can cause ionization. Or in the case that we're going to talk about here, lasers, they can literally push, you know, terawatt laser beams into the sky. And doing this, they can steer storms. And again, folks, this is right out of the Wall Street Journal. And if people want to look that up, it's called Lasers Can Guide Dangerous Lightning Strikes to a Safer Path. You see, that's the Wall Street Journal title. Now, Dane, your reaction to the fact that, yeah, they're admitting this now, but they're kind of trying to hide it into, say, oh, this is about moving lightning away from airports and things like that. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Anytime you interfere with a system, you have a negative result when you interfere with natural systems, as I know you know. And in the case of lightning, it's a very profound phenomenon. It only needs a path. It will always take the easiest path. Thus, I'm sure many may have seen on Discovery Channel and other documentary shows, if you fire a small model rocket with a very fine thread of wire that's connected to it that spools off as that rocket goes up, if you do that during a thunderstorm, you're very likely going to get a strike there just from that very thin wire, because – it simply creates an easier path lightning will find that path and come down. I actually did lightning suppression work for Bechtel Power. And that's one of the things that's so far kept me safe on my mountaintop in Northern California, because I'm off grid. It's a prime spot for lightning to strike. I've taken one direct hit here, but I have the whole hill gridded off with lightning rods and a grid on the perimeter of the mountain to take that charge to ground. Lightning's always trying to go to ground. So them conducting this is not that hard for them to steer and manipulate the strikes, because that disbalance in charge wants to get to ground. But I would argue this is just one more means of taking people's eye off of the tankers that are dumping literally millions of tons, tens of millions of tons of particulates into our skies every year. And just as they did, Mike, I'm sure you saw all the media coverage of the few balloons carrying a few pounds of material that may have gotten up to the stratosphere that was right. launched from Baja, right?
Right. That wasn't that the Make Sunsets company doing
Correct.
That?
Thank you.
Yeah, polluting
Correct.
The skies for money.
and they pumped that story up as if that had any significance other than being a publicity stunt. And again, all of it takes everybody's eyes off of the tankers that are crisscrossing our skies, dumping tens of millions of tons annually.
Right.
So there's a lot of distraction going on, but on the climate intervention scenario and the various aspects of that, because many people think if they don't see a sky that's got very visible trails from horizon to horizon, there's nothing going on. And that couldn't be further from the truth. These engineered winter weather scenarios are a core part of climate engineering, and the conditions they create in the ground are unimaginably destructive for whatever life forms are left. When you drop temperatures, literally in the case of Denver recently, I'm sure you saw this, they dropped 75 degrees in hours
oh,
from
yeah.
50 plus above to 24 below. And you're talking about a chemical that's chemically frozen material that's so cold to the touch, it flash freezes, flash burns, and it just destroys the ecosystems, Mike, and they're wreaking havoc with the engineered winter events.
Oh, clearly, and causing massive crop failures, which is the next thing I wanted to get to. But before we go to that, you know, the winter wheat wipeout has already happened across the Midwest, you know, the breadbasket states of America. We'll get to that. But let me read you just three sentences from this study about lasers guiding lightning, because it is exactly what you just said, Dane, where they can ionize the air, they can create electrically conductive channels to guide lightning. This means that they can guide lightning into intended targets. They can literally weaponize lightning strikes to hit where they want them to hit. So here it is. Number one, this is from the study published in that journal, what is it, Nature Photonics. Number one, a laser beam is focused through a telescope and short, intense laser pulses are sent towards clouds above the tower tip. Right, so they have a tower where they want the lightning to go. Number two, the pulses ionize the air beyond the tower tip, creating an electrically conductive channel that can guide lightning to the rod below. And then number three, a rod atop a tower helps provide a, quote, safe path for lightning to follow to the ground. So they're admitting it. They can use lasers to have lightning strike wherever they want, but they can also move storms with the same technology. It's right there in the study. Amazing. So thank you again, Dane, and thank you all for listening. God bless you all. Take care, and we'll have more updates from Dane later this year on Brightown.com and other platforms. Take care, everybody.